finishes off in style. A magnificent strike into the crowd. India lift the World Cup after 28 years.
One last time in 2019, India took the field for T20 cricket and they turned out to be 2-1 winners against West Indies. They won the first T20 in Hyderabad without much trouble, then lost the second one in Thiruvananthapuram by 8 wickets. And it was not really surprising because India's prowess batting first has always been under the scanner. But then come the Wankhede, come Mumbai, come the chance of that ferocious crowd, especially the North Stand gang, which is a friend of ours. Well, India were victors by 67 runs and wrapped that series up by a 2-1 margin. Virat Kohli supreme with 183 runs in 3 matches. And then there were other important contributions, mostly at the top. KL Rahul answering a few questions, the bowling coming together as well. All in all, a great series win for India, especially because you're building up to the all-important T20 World Cup next year. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of our podcast, Hotspot. As always, I am your host, Chetan Narula, sports journalist and broadcaster. And with me, my co-host, Deep Das Gupta, former Indian cricketer and broadcaster. Deep, a lot of tick marks for India in this T20 series, rounding up the year for us, really.
Hello, Chetan, and hello, all the listeners. Yes, it was. It was a great series because, this is a good West Indies side. Before this, if you look at South Africa and Bangladesh, average T20 sides, but this West Indies side looked different. They played differently. The mindset was different. And with Pollard and people like Ewan Lewis and all these guys back from hibernation for West Indies cricket, I think this is a really, really good T20 side, and India beating them batting first in the decider was phenomenal.
Well, you look at some of the key performances from West Indies as well. You had Shimron Hetmyer, who gave a good account of himself. Kieran Pollard, I mean, we'd spoken about it, Deep, that Pollard is one to watch out for in terms of his leadership skills. Yeah. You had Lendl Simmons with a half century in the second T20. Two different sides at two different junctures. West Indies starting to gel together as a group. Yes, they are missing Sunil Narayan, Andre Russell, potentially even Chris Gayle, but you know, they're starting to gel together. That's what we had underlined. India, they're perhaps in a different space, in a better space. They've played a lot of T20 cricket. This year, they've been winning, at regular intervals as well. From that point of view, how many questions were India able to answer, or even West Indies for that matter?
Let's say West Indies, right? I think West Indies have answered quite a few questions. That's how I see it. I think, this whole reconciliation and this new approach by the newly formed West Indies boards and the office bearers, getting, people like Pollard back, Ewan Lewis, Lendl Simmons back, makes a huge difference. And mind you, we've got another, 9 to 10 months to go before T20 yes. World Cup, which obviously West Indies are the reigning champions. I mean, it augurs well for West Indian cricket and it augurs well for world cricket. So I think, as far as I'm concerned, I think West Indies cricket is back where it should be, at least in this format. And India, I mean, I thought, there were quite a few interesting parts to this whole series. To start off with, I don't know what you think about it, but I think India is going back to, the approach that they had a year ago. As in, in between, we saw India going in with batsmen at number 10, as in people who can bat at number 10 and 9, making the batting really, really deep and kind of compromising with the bowling aspect of it. But if you look at the last series, as in the West Indies series, I thought, they are kind of going back to where they were, and which I kind of agree with. You had Chahal and Kuldeep back in the squad, even though they did not play together. But, you know, you're looking more match winners with the ball. And I think that's a very, very important aspect. I don't know what you think. I know you would like batting as far as T20 is concerned. But, you know, I like this approach better than what India had in the past two series.
In a way, when you say that, you know, Pollard has played so much T20 cricket, has that experience, he doesn't get intimidated. And I think that was the key quality, that West Indies were not at all intimidated. Yes, they had lost that series against India at home, but there was no intimidation there. And I think Pollard being the captain had a lot to do with it. They were ready to come out, you know, and come out punching. Just the last match, things got a bit away from them. But for the first two T20s, it was probably a bit neck in neck because, India had a few issues to sort out. And yes, this is where I come to your point, Deep. And this is, in fact, our first topic of discussion today, the approach from the Indian side or from the Indian captain or the Indian team management. Yes, you had mentioned that, you know, leg spinners are back. And if I remember correctly, Deep, you had perhaps picked both leg spinners in your playing 11 for the first T20. I had... In our last episode, I had begged to differ from you on that. So not really a game of one-upmanship, but they did not play two rest spinners together throughout the series, which I thought was a right call because, A, you had Ravindra Jadeja, Washington Sundar, and a wrist spinner for the first two T20s. So that's where your spin angle comes in. But again, with Hardik Pandya not available at the moment, you had Sundar, you had Jadeja, and then you had Shivam Dubey. So your batting was a bit extended and Bhuvneshwar Kumar batted at number 8. So they extended the batting and they got the composition right by playing only one wrist spinner.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, I think both of them should play and will play is what I foresee as soon as Hardik is back. Because listen, you need three bowlers who can bowl in the power play, right? And generally, you look at three seamers. As soon as Hardik comes back, you have a third seamer who's an all-rounder. So that kind of helps your batting as well, your batting strength. But at this point in time, when he's not available, you're looking at someone like maybe a third seamer, out-and-out seamer. That's when you... And, you know, unfortunately, apart from Bhuv, you can bat a bit and Deepak, who can bat a bit, you don't have a proper all-rounder, seeming all-rounder apart from Hardik. And then you have to fall back on someone like Washington Sundar. Even though being a spinner, he is your first six over bowler. So he generally bowls there and he can bat. So I guess that's where you've got to compromise. And that's what that's how I see it pan out. If Hardik is not playing, you will either play Washington Sundar or Jadeja, because that does not really compromise with your batting strength.
It's interesting that you spoke about Hardik, Deep, because he was present at the Wankhede. It was interesting to see him there in the Reliance dugout or the Reliance balcony. Obviously, he lives in Mumbai, plays for the Mumbai Indians, but he was wearing that Indian jersey. Shows that he's not far away from coming back to international cricket. Probably be back in time for the New Zealand series, perhaps. He's read some comments from him this past week where he says that he's working hard on his fitness.
Yeah, but see, how I see it, Chetan, is he shouldn't be rushed into it. I mean, there is obviously the inclination to get someone like Hardik, the only seeming all-rounder that India has, to be honest, to get back him into the fold. But, I mean, you've got to resist that because, as you mentioned, this is going to be a long year and a very important year because it's a World Cup year. So, yeah, got to be a little careful. You don't want to rush him in.
And that's where the interesting point is, that phrase that you just mentioned, that he's the seeming all-rounder. You know, again, this brings us to the other part of the team composition discussion. India, when they played three pacers in that last T20, three full-time pacers, they dropped Ravindra Jadeja, they played Shivam Dubey and Washington Sundar. So they dropped Ravindra Jadeja, which was a little surprising for me. I thought Washington Sundar had an ordinary series, perhaps he would be dropped because Jadeja is being seen as a proper all-rounder now.
It was kind of surprise. I wouldn't say really surprising, but you can understand why, because obviously they had what, three left-handers in the top five.
I'll just put this on record. I just don't really like this. You know, I know it's proven a lot of times that left-arm spinners are taken apart by left-handed batsmen. I think it's really cruel to generalize like that. I'm not somebody who believes in that. But again, my point here is that India, with three pacers, looked a much better, a much balanced bowling attack, especially with those dewy conditions. You had three full-time pacers, Bhuvi, Chahar and Shami. So when Pandya comes in, do you drop that full-time pacer again?
Yes, I would do that. I would definitely do that. You know what my ideal bowling line would be? Two leg spinners, Hardik, and two seamers. So I've got four out and out bowlers. I mean, obviously Bumrah when he gets back. So it'll be Bumrah, one amongst, one between Deepak and Bhuvi as of now. And you have Hardik. So these would be my three seamers and with the two leg spinners. And I don't mind. Listen, I don't mind if there is anyone else. It's not Kuldeep and Chahal, that particular combination. Because how I see it is you've got to play your match-winning bowlers or wicket-taking bowlers. You can't be playing bowlers who are predominantly restraining. So I think that's where I stand.
Well, I beg to differ in that sense a bit because I don't see Hardik's role as a third pacer alone. I think he should be in contention for the slot that Shivam Dubey is occupying right now. So you have Shivam Dubey, you have a second all-rounder in either Washington Sundar or Ravindra Jadeja as per the opposition combination. So you have Washington Sundar and slash Ravindra Jadeja there, and then you still have to pick a wholesome bowling attack. Because in Australia, last year when India went there, they played three pacers in every T20 game. So in Australia, and here we have to talk about the Australian conditions, Deep. For me, India have to play three full-time pacers plus Hardik Pandya. So you're looking at three pacers. For me, it would be Bhuvi slash Chahar, Shami and Bumrah. So you pick three from them.
Based on what are you picking Shami now?
I'm saying that Shami will be in the squad, or Shami will perhaps be in contention for the squad, because you, if you have Bhuvi, Bumrah and Chahar and you're playing three pacers consistently, so you need a backup. So you take four pacers to Australia. It seems a lot for a T20 tournament, but if Hardik Pandya is back, it could just provide the balance. So you have three pacers, two spinners and two all-rounders, and that gives you your six bowlers, six proper bowlers.
Like I said, I'm very certain with my combination. And yes, I will definitely play a sixth bowler. That could be Shivam Dubey or Jadeja. I mean, I look at Jadeja as a proper all-rounder now. So either Shivam Dubey or Jadeja, along with Hardik, who will kind of be the fifth and the sixth bowlers.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you mentioned that, you know, on what basis to take Shami there, because he played a T20 game or an international T20 game for the first time since 2016, but he looked really sharp, as sharp he has looked in tests and ODIs.
Okay.
Which is,
let's not forget, India were defending 240 in a 20-over game. So let's not, my point is, yes, he looked sharp, but let's not jump the gun here. Let's wait a close game under pressure, whether he can still bowl the Yorkers or his slower ones and
all.
You know, so that's the reason when, you know, I've been speaking to a lot of people post the third T20. I was like, yeah, Shami's back and he's looking good. I was like, you know, 240. Even I would look decent if I had to defend 240. So, well, I mean, forget Shami, who's one of the best in the world. So my only submission here is give him some time. There's enough T20 going to be played before the World Cup. And
exactly.
Let's take a call when we reach there, I guess.
Which was a bit of my underlining point that, yes, you give him more time in T20 cricket. And in fact, his IPL season is perhaps going to determine whether he goes to the T20 World Cup, which is true for a lot of other places, other spots in the Indian squad as well. Let's move our attention to those other spots. Deep, that top order is looking really, really good, especially when you see the third T20, and especially when you see Virat Kohli batting at number four. We saw at number three what he can do. He can drop anchor, take his time, even if he gets a slow start, and then suddenly shift up from second gear to fifth gear. In Mumbai, he can start straight away in sixth gear. So this is a complete batsman. Much depends on where he bats.
You know, the good part about this T20 series, we saw a different Virat. Virat who hits sixes, Virat who hits boundaries, Virat who is not overtly dependent on singles and twos. Because, I mean, for the longest time, even Virat said, listen, I'm not a six-hitting batsman. But if you look at the last T20, he hit seven sixes and four fours. So he hit more sixes than fours, right?
Yes.
So obviously, this is an aspect of his game which don't think he himself was very confident about. But I think after this series, he will take his, personally, his six-hitting capabilities a lot more seriously now. And the other thing, it's a very interesting that you touched upon, I was thinking about it, the fact that is number four a more suitable position for him, where he can be a little more fearless with his batting. The last couple of T20s, I beg your pardon, he batted at number four. Shivam did well at number three in the second one. And so did, he did not do well, but obviously he came at number four. But what was really heartening to see is him really, really expressing himself. Maybe number four is better suited for him. Maybe coming at over number 9-10 suits him a little more than maybe coming a little earlier. So these are things, I think these are things which seriously, these are not coincidences. This is what I'm saying. There seems to be a little pattern growing here. Maybe Indian team should look deeper into this.
The kind of batsman that Kohli is, he's, especially in limited overs cricket, he breaks down the situation really well. Whether you're chasing or whether you're setting targets, he's always aware, this is what I want to do.
I'm just taking it from what you just mentioned, and I just suddenly thought about it. How about Virat actually batting at number four when you're batting first? Taking your point forward, when you're chasing, I mean, you know what you need to chase, right? So he's got his roadmap set and he's the best in the world, right? So he's fine batting at number three when India's chasing. But when India's batting, how about getting someone like Shivam or Rishabh or whoever there, and provided India's got a good start, I mean, send that person in and he comes at, you know, that roughly that 10 over mark. I mean, these are things which I think it's very interesting, because we haven't really thought about it from that angle, because he looked a lot freer after 10 overs. He looked a lot more freer in terms of, you know, six hitting and shot making. I think there is something that Indian team should look into.
And he was very particular about what he wanted to do. There was real clarity in terms of what his role had suddenly become. Yes, in the first T20, he was trying to stay at the wicket. He was trying to maneuver the innings. He was trying to drop anchor. But if you look at the last two T20s, he was very clear, absolutely certain. And even in the first T20, in the latter half of his innings, he was very clear that he wanted to tonk the ball. And you know, you talk about him as and when I say you, everybody talks about him as this classical timer of the ball. But when he puts those wrists into power mode, I mean, those wrists, those brilliant wrists, those flicked sixes were a particular highlight for me. Unbelievable flicked sixes. And even when he hit that six over cover, there was a lot of power generated from his bottom hand into launching that ball over cover. And you know, even when you do that on the offside, you're still using a lot of power from your wrist. So he's an immaculate batsman, a lot of power in those wrists, a lot of bottom hand, and of course the clarity that I want to hit the ball and I want to hit it over the rope. As you said, Deep, I could not agree more. I think he should be India's number four permanently in T20s, whether India are batting first or India are chasing. Of course, if you lose Rohit Sharma early in the first two overs, or if India make a poor start, then you can send him up at number three, you know, seeing the opposition or seeing how the chase is going. Especially if you're chasing and you lose Rohit Sharma early, you send Virat Kohli up at number three. So the Indian batting lineup is flexible in that sense. But yes, you had Shivam Dubey. You already also had Rishabh Pant at number three. How about Manish Pandey at number three? He's played that role in the IPL, or even Shreyas Iyer. Both of them have played that role. So even if Rohit Sharma falls early or KL Rahul falls early, you can send Iyer or Pandey up at number three and Virat Kohli stays back at number four.
I don't know. I'm not too keen on that that idea. I'll tell you why. Let's touch upon also something that we were going to discuss, is the attitude of the Indian team, especially in the last T20, which was fearless. Sure. And going after the bowler, going after the bowling attack from ball one, right? So if that's the kind of an attitude which the Indian team is going to have, or if that's the approach, batting first, especially on good batting surfaces, which we are expecting to kind of find when we go to Australia, it makes sense you put someone at number three who's a hitter, who's a big hitter. So especially if it's in the first six overs, so you have the luxury of the power play. Even if the fact is, you know, you've I mean, the openers have had a good start, then you want that start, that momentum to continue. So you send in someone like a Shivam Dubey, or for that matter, Rishabh Pant if he's playing, or someone who bats at number 5-6, not someone in the top four, because if that doesn't fire, if the number three doesn't fire, whoever it is, and you know, by any chance Virat fails or Virat gets out or Virat needs a partner, you still have a batsman to come. That's where I think maybe someone like if Manish is playing or Shreyas, you know, these guys are batsmen who can play along with Virat or Rohit, or even for that matter, win games on their own. So I would rather have a batsman coming after Virat. So I'd rather have Rishabh and Shivam. These kind of players, I'm not talking about them specifically, these kind of players who would ideally bat at number 5, 6, 7 and can be promoted.
Well, it's an interesting thing that you put forward, Deep, because you know I want to take our listeners to the third T20 against South Africa, if I'm not wrong, and that's where India batted first. That's where Virat Kohli came out and said that we want to bat first as much as possible. And in that game, India's batting, you know, after winning the toss and batting first, did not really work out. They tried to go hard at the ball. They tried to hit hard. They wanted to be aggressive. It did not work out too well. And South Africa were able to level the series. That's where, you know, this point emanates really. Yes, you want to go hard. You want to be aggressive. Okay, you want to hold back somebody like an Iyer or a Pandey so that there is batting afterwards as well. But if you look at the Wankhede T20, there was also this ultra aggressive approach. Why? Because West Indies can hit bigger, West Indies can hit harder, and also there was a due factor. So suddenly India went into the game thinking 200 is minimum here. We have to get 200 minimum. So there was no other way than to go this ultra aggressive approach. But will they always be this ultra aggressive when batting first? I'm not so sure.
Maybe what you're saying is right. I mean, all the things that you mentioned about, you know, West Indies batting 200, Wankhede, that pitch, because obviously that approach would also depend a lot on the pitch, right? If you're playing on a 160 pitch, because in Wankhede you do realize, I mean, no total is safe unless it's 240, right? Even 200 is not safe. So my point is, obviously, if you're looking at a surface which is 160-ish kind of a surface, kind of surface that India played the second game, you might not see that kind of aggression, but you would still see. I rather have the Indian team play with that kind of a mindset. It's like 180 or 120 kind of a mindset. You know, if we get a winning total, or we bundle out for 120, 130, or be too defensive or too cautious and get to 160 and then you lose out. So that's where I also believe your bowling will play a huge role, defending. So if you have match-winning bowlers, and if you somehow, you're looking at 180 and you kind of collapse and get to 140 somehow, at least you have match-winning bowlers who can try and bail you out. So if you have batting, if it's like predominantly a batting side, you're only going one way, right? And there is no guarantee that if you have 6-7 batsmen, every game you're going to score 200, 180, 200 runs. And that's where I think you should, or the team should look at proper four bowlers who have the ability to pick wickets. And then you have your fifth bowler and your sixth bowling option.
Quite a few ifs and buts in terms of your bowling composition, in terms of your batting composition, in terms of where Virat Kohli should be batting. Both Deep and I are of the agreement that he should be batting more and more at number four. And of course, obviously, there's the added rider of, you know, whether India are batting first, India are chasing. Irrespective of that, number four seems to be an optimal position for Virat to perhaps maneuver the innings better.
The good part of what came out of this T20 is Indian team being more flexible with their batting order and their thought process. I think that's, for me, is the basic summary of this ODI or takeaway from this T20 series. India being more flexible, as you mentioned, Virat at number four. Let's just say, yes, there is a another angle or another way of looking at Virat's batting position, which maybe before this series we weren't aware of, or maybe even the Indian team wasn't aware of. So just be, just be more flexible is all I'm asking. And if the situation suits Virat going at four, please. Or if it suits Virat going at number three, so be it. But let's not be too, stuck up on batting orders, because I think I've mentioned this before. In ODIs, you have 1, 2, 3 who should be fixed and then flexible. In T20s, it's your openers who needs to be fixed, and everything else after that should be situation based.
An interesting point that I remember from one of our previous episodes, which was, just previewing the Bangladesh T20 series, and we had senior journalist Vijay Lokpally as our guest, and he had underlined that it was a good break for Virat because he could watch the team from the outside and perhaps gain a new perspective.
Yeah.
And maybe, when we talk about his flexibility at number four and that big hitting, maybe that approach has come from sitting out that, okay, this is what I think I can do, or I think I should do as the lead batsman of the side. To move on quickly to the next aspect, and it just really merges a bit with the ODIs that are coming up, ODI series, KL Rahul. And before we talk about KL Rahul, Shikhar Dhawan played 12 T20s in 2019 up until that Bangladesh series, and his strike rate was 110. If you just think about the T20s he's played since the World Cup, West Indies, South Africa, Bangladesh, his strike rate was around 100. That is not good enough. Then you have KL Rahul, who comes in and starts scoring at 140, 150. His average strike rate over the last 2 to 3 years in T20 cricket, including IPL, is 130, 140. You know where I'm going with this, Deep, don't you?
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think it was with Vijay Bhai, that episode of ours, where I did mention maybe the last series, which again should have been or should be his kind of last in terms of he can't produce anything substantial. Because this is the approach that India needs to have. I think India, especially batting first, has been way too cautious in their approaches. And I think it's time to change the mindset batting first, and not just, personnel. And maybe Shikhar, listen, the issue with Shikhar is obviously he's injured and he's not available because of injury. But before his injury as well, it's not international cricket. He wasn't scoring runs in domestic cricket, and that's a concern, right? I can understand you're not scoring at international level for whatever reasons. And it's good that this is a good time to introduce a new partner to Rohit, because obviously Rohit and Shikhar were fantastic together, right? And once you get you with a partner, you get used to how both of you kind of approach an innings, and you suddenly there's a change. It takes a little bit longer for the other partner as well. So I think there is enough time for Rohit to get used to KL Rahul being his opening partner and how to approach an innings as a pair.
KL Rahul in T20s, international cricket, we are talking about 146th strike rate. When you talk about T20s in general, 123 T20s and 139, that's strike rate. You know, KL Rahul has had a bit of an unfair road. You know, you want to say that, you want to highlight that, Deep, because he's been regularly in and out of the side. He was shuffled down the order. He's an opener. Let's not make any mistake there. He's an opener, and you want to fit him in the ODI side. So he was asked to bat at number four. Suddenly, Shikhar was out of the World Cup, and he was moved up to the opener slot there. And he did well, especially in that high-pressure game against Pakistan. And even after that, my point here is KL Rahul should be given his due. And, you know, let's just draw a line in the sand and say KL Rahul must open in every T20 match India plays going forward. Do you agree?
Well, yes, I definitely do. I mean, I think it'll be a massive, massive injustice if he doesn't find a place in the playing 11. That'll be very, very unfortunate, because that's how we've been playing. And as you mentioned, it's not about just this series or last series. He's been consistent last couple of years with an average, I believe, an average of over 40 and a strike rate of around 140 plus. So yes. It's not just about just striking it like fast and hard, but it's also about being consistent. I mean, somebody with an average of 40 is very, very good in T20 cricket and this format. So, I mean, listen, with white ball cricket, last couple of years, he's been really good. I mean, before this series, we kind of looked at KL Rahul holistically and we included when we would judge him or we would assess him, we would kind of also include his performances with the red ball, which I think was unfair. But if you look at his red ball cricket in the last couple of, white ball performances in the last couple of years, he's been a standout performer.
Absolutely. And, you know, in that sense, yes, Dhawan's bad luck that he could not recover from injury or first of all got injured in the first place and was out of the series against against West Indies. And that's how sometimes things turn out to be, you know. It could be a turning point for India in terms of sorting out that top order because Shikhar Dhawan, Rohit Sharma, Virat Kohli, in those top three in T20, they were batting at the same pace, taking their time and then, you know, starting to go after the ball. So this is a different change of pace. But the point that I'm trying to make here is, because of Dhawan's injury, there's every chance that Rahul will get to open in the ODIs as well. Yes, Mayank Agarwal drafted in, but tough to see him get a game ahead of Rahul, given the kind of form he is in. And that's a good thing because immediately after this, you have three T20s against Sri Lanka. So it becomes a bit of a continuity for Rahul and he's not getting that break, which is, I think, really vital at this stage of his career.
Yes, it is. And also the fact that, listen, I believe a couple of things here as far as openers are concerned. You go with form, you go with, and especially in T20 cricket, it's not just form, it's your mental state. So if you're in form, obviously in a good mental state and you can play fearless cricket, because T20 cricket, we keep talking about playing fearless cricket. But if you're not in the right mental frame, you can't play fearless cricket. Even if you want to, you can't. So that's where I think, you know, for the World Cup, you've still got around 10 odd months to go. I think it's a little too premature to talk about it. But what it also tells you is if that is what you want, maybe Shikhar, after he recovers, he goes back to domestic cricket and he starts playing that way. Maybe he will be told by the team management, like, listen, you know what? This is what we're looking at when we're looking at a T20 opener. So maybe Shikhar has it. But what the good part about KL is, if you look at his the way he bats, he never looks hurried. Even though he's striking at 140 and averaging 40, it never seems like he's hurried or he's forcing his trying to force his pace. I mean, even the last T20I, I mean, it was orthodox cricketing shots, inside out over covers, late cuts, flicks and cuts. I mean, he wasn't, it didn't seem that he was not in his comfort zone playing those shots. And that is the reason I think KL is such a class act, because he has that game in him. I mean, he's technically correct and he can get those runs as fast as he does playing orthodox cricketing shots.
Well, the point that you mentioned about Dhawan here is that, you know, it could be a tough road ahead of him coming back, because you think about it, there is not a particular marquee ODI event. He's out of the test side. He's probably out of the T20 reckoning as well, unless he goes back and starts scoring quickly. And you know what? The T20 competition for this year is over. Now it's the Ranji Trophy. So the only tournament really remaining for Shikhar Dhawan is the IPL. He needs to go out there. He needs to start tonking the ball and he needs to do it consistently because, yes, let's be fair, Dhawan's record in ICC events is brilliant. It'll be very, very tough to ignore him. But you also have the likes of Mayank Agarwal and Prithvi Shaw. Not to mention, Virat Kohli also likes to open for Royal Challengers Bangalore. So again, like in the case of Shami or many other cricketers, the 2020 IPL, yes, that'll answer a lot of questions.
Yeah, but I think with Shikhar, the good part is he needs to first get back into form. So
yes,
he wasn't in form. It's not just that he was batting slowly, he was not in form. So I think Ranji Trophy helps him get back into some kind of form and rhythm. And then once he gets that, it's followed by the IPL where he can actually try and do something about his strike rate. And you mentioned about openers. Let's not forget Sanju Samson's in the fray as well. And he's a top order batsman.
Quite a few names there. Sanju Samson, Rishabh Pant. Well, he needs a good IPL too. Things really not going as he would like them to be. I mean, I thought that opportunity at number three was a really good opportunity because he really didn't have to think too hard. Just stay there for a couple overs and then start hitting. Because
what I honestly think about that innings is, you know, the fact that he was
two ball duck.
Yeah, I mean, he I mean, whatever little he was out there for. But my point was, he was sent to do that. He was sent to do that. But the positives, again, you know, we've known each other for a while, and you know me. My assessment is not based on sheer performances or numbers.
Sure.
So even if you look at the second T20, he got 30 odd. I mean, scoring
odd,
30 odd of 30 odd balls.
Yeah.
It was the way he was batting. Again, I've mentioned this quite a few times, is I want to see him bat through offside. And if you remember that second T20, he was hitting through the offside. And that's something that I think will help him in the longer term. And that's what I think. I mean, whatever little we've seen of him in this series, I kind of liked what I saw. As far as the last one is concerned, listen, he was sent at number three to do a job. I mean, to hit or go after the bowlers. He tried to, was unsuccessful, and I won't hold that against him.
To an extent, I agree with you, Deep, because even I thought that 33 of 20 or 22 balls that he scored in the second T20 was a good innings, was a good knock. And yes, his offside play is a bit circumspect, but he might just be working on it with Vikram Rathore. But like I mentioned, he still needs to do a little more. And I think both of us agree to that. Needs to do a little more.
Yeah.
Needs to have a little bit more improvement, especially in his batting, before he can book a ticket to Australia. Right then, we are here at the fag end of this episode. Looking ahead to the three ODI matches, we just want to outline the team changes for our listeners. You have Mayank Agarwal, of course, coming in for Shikhar Dhawan, and Kedar Jadhav coming in for Washington Sundar. Bit of an oddball there, really, because you don't really expect Kedar Jadhav to last long on the international arena, but well, he could surprise us all. Apart from that, the other interesting point is Deepak Chahar in the ODI squad. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes about things, or even if he gets an opportunity in these three matches. Otherwise, India picking pretty much a similar squad to the T20 series. Well, then that brings us to the end of this hot take. Thanks for listening to us. We will be back soon with a new episode, which will be a special one, because we will be discussing the IPL auctions on December 19. What new players the teams will buy, how will they solidify their existing lineups. There'll be a lot to talk about with Deep Das Gupta. In the meantime, do leave your feedback and comments, share it on social media, reach out to us on social media as well. We are now on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and TuneIn, so you can subscribe to this podcast hotspot there as well. Until next time, goodbye.
Dhoni finishes off in style. A magnificent strike into the crowd. India lift the World Cup after 28 years.